Hello and welcome to the Skilding podcast. We believe that true deep learning occurs when three things happen. You must 1, understand, 2, remember, and 3, deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast covers the first part, understand. Complete this learning by getting the second and third part at skilding.com. So together, let's get the key takeaways from this book understood. So hello and welcome to this episode of the podcast with Ben Balazzi, who's been on previously, talking about Jordan Peterson, I think you did the last time, wasn't it?
That's right.
So today we're talking about a book called, Ben, go for it, what's it called?
It's called Talk Like TED by Carmine Gallo. I think everyone kind of struggles with public speaking, and everyone's faced with public speaking in one or two situations at least in their life. So it was a great book, and it definitely helped me with my presentations and public speaking.
The TED is like TED Talks, I think, I assume, is it?
That's right, yeah. So just to give a bit of an intro, Carmine at the beginning of the book says the ability to communicate persuasively is the single greatest skill that will help you accomplish your dreams. TED presentations have been viewed over 1 billion times. The writer has analyzed hundreds of different TED Talks and has trained and interviewed some of the most successful TED presenters. As a result, he developed 9 techniques, which I suppose we'll go through, that appeal to the way our brains are wired to receive, process information.
So this idea of talking like TED is to be persuasive regardless of the situation, I assume, like whether it's a sales conversation, an actual presentation, it kind of covers all kinds of things.
And how to make it resonate with people. And I suppose we'll get into it. There are different ways in which you can engage with your audience, and I suppose he gives them all throughout the book.
Yeah. All right, go for it. What's the first one?
So the first chapter is called Unleash the Master Within. When you surround yourself by people who share anything or a collective passion around a common purpose, anything is possible. So I suppose in this chapter, he's really trying to get across the point that you must be passionate about what you're speaking about. Now, I suppose I've given presentations in college, and I suppose you could probably speak to this a bit better, Kevin, that I'm not really too interested in. And you're boring your audience if you're not that passionate about it. And that's the point he's trying to get across in this interview. Have you ever had a time where you've given a presentation or talk about something you weren't that passionate about?
I've had situations where I've given the same presentation literally hundreds of times, and by the 900th time, you're just losing your mind. But what I found with that is that if you're not passionate about something, there's a workaround, I believe, for that, and it's that it's not about you as the presenter. You're there to serve the audience. You're there for them. You're not there to amuse yourself. You're there to be of service to people. So I always found that if I did find myself kind of drifting off in my mind while I was talking or kind of phoning it in or whatever, I would think I'm actually not here to amuse myself or to entertain myself I already know all this stuff. I'm here to serve the audience, and that kind of gets you focused. So if you are feeling dispassionate, say, about a particular topic, then just remember the audience are there to hear about this topic. So you better get on board, like, and serve them what they're there to be served, you know?
Yeah, I suppose it's kind of cliche to say, oh, speak about something you're passionate about, but it is true, Kevin, because you might find yourself repeating the same things. And I suppose, was it something you were passionate about that you were repeating?
So a long time ago in a different life, what I was thinking of, I used to deliver study skills to students and to parents and teachers. And it was the same presentation again and again. And I loved it. And it's actually what led to what we're doing now with Tribal. Mm. But it was very... Because it was so repetitive for me, I really had to dial into that idea of being of service to people. Even though I was deeply passionate about how we learn and learning techniques and the different ways that people learn and the different ways to teach and all that, it was very much to be of service. Like, so the passion would always kind of fade eventually, no matter what the topic was. So it was important to me to make sure that I was being of service. I've said it 100 times now, but you're there for your audience, not for yourself. So that would always help me. So when he talks about it, unleash the master within, is that, what does he mean by that? Like, is that it? Like, just be passionate about what you're talking about.
And be honest with yourself. I suppose if you're delivering a presentation that you don't really like, or you're not, or a topic that you're not really interested in, is to be honest with yourself and kind of figure out that maybe this isn't something I should be talking about, and someone is better served to discuss this topic.
Mm.
And it kind of resonated with me, because I suppose there's been, I'm in sales, and there's 1,000 different industries, and I had to pick one that I really liked as well. So that was that kind of that chapter kind of stuck with me. And especially in sales, you're kind of presenting all the time.
Mm.
and giving the same spiel as you kind of mentioned there. So you have to really like what you're selling, what you're presenting, what you're speaking about.
And do you like sales? Do you like working in sales?
You love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. Yeah.
Why?
It's all
why?
Psychology. It's first of all, it's communication. You're speaking with people on a daily basis. And I love that.
Is it the chase that you like?
I love the chase. Yeah. 100%. And what I will say, there's kind of pitfalls with that as well, Kevin, because if you're having a bad week in sales, you're kind of having a bad week personally yourself. And then the opposite, then if you're having a great week in sales, you're having a great week, which is kind of bad as well, because you kind of extract yourself from work at times. But definitely, I think it's a great industry to be in.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very motivating thing. And I'm interested in it, and I'm passionate about sales.
Yeah.
Because, you know, selling has been going on since the dawn of time, really.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm passionate about. But no. Finding the right industry is key there, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, about what you say about the sales going on since the dawn of times. One of the very first books I did on the podcast was Dan Pink's book, To Sell as Human. And he talks about how we're all in sales all the time. And it's interesting that people listening to this will think, well, I'm not in sales, or, you know, there's a whole sales team. But the receptionist in a building is in sales. You know, like, everyone is presenting the company in some way or other, you know. So, interesting.
Yeah, okay. I know we're going off a bit off topic now, but even when you meet someone new for the first time, you're still selling yourself, which it's important. Even if you're not in sales, you really are.
Yeah. So second one then, master the art of storytelling. What's that about?
Yeah, and he gives a great kind of parable within this chapter about these guys done an experiment, and they bought kind of like 130 pieces of junk. So, like, for example, like a banana phone, and they sold it on eBay, and it's called the 2700% story, in which they bought a load of junk, and they in the description of the item, they gave a story about the item, and, you know, they maybe attached a funny story to it, and everything they sold collectively went up 2700%, and he really tries to hone in the power of a story attached to something.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a great way of getting his point across, because people really listen to stories. Mm. And it's our brains are kind of wired to storytelling, and I suppose it's something we all do, you know, speaking to friends, we all tell stories. Yeah. And to integrate that into your presentation or your talk is a really great way to get the audience interested.
Yeah, it's how you hook people. That's what I found with presenting was you could talk about facts and figures all you like, but when you wrap that up into an analogy or a metaphor, or even just telling a story from your personal life, and then bring it back around to the point you're trying to make, you have people eating out of the palm of your hand, because people love stories. We are a species of storytellers, like. And when you said that there about you know, telling stories, it reminded me of two things. The first thing I thought of was Leonardo da Vinci. I am a massive fan of Leonardo da Vinci, and read loads of books on him and stuff. And I was in London a few years ago, and I went to the National Art Gallery, whatever it's called over there, and one of his paintings is there. And like, if you didn't know, it's a great painting and stuff, but I'd read this book by Walter Isaacson, and he wrote this biography about Da Vinci. And it's funny, you become like an armchair expert about Da Vinci's paintings, because he has, like, you know, the painting in the book itself, and then describes what's so good about it. Like, say, in the bottom right-hand corner, the way he's done the petals and the flowers, like, no one had ever done that before, that much detail and that much thought and all that. And then if you look at the top left-hand corner, there's something else that he's done that no one had ever done before, and you think, Jesus, yeah, that's mad to look at that. So when I went to look at the painting, that I was looking for all these details, because it wasn't just a painting, there was a whole story behind it. And a part of that story then is the people who had owned that painting over the last 500 years. Like, that had, you know, hung in palaces in France. And,
yeah.
You know, been through wars and stuff, and the Nazis had stolen it and given it back, and or somebody had taken it back. Like, all this, there was all these stories about this particular painting, that it isn't just a painting on the wall. There's a whole history connected to it. So that's the first thing I thought of when you mentioned Master the Art of Storytelling, that it absolutely is a way to hook people. And we've done podcasts on storytelling. I'm trying to think, there's one by a guy called Sean Callahan, if people want to look it up on our website. What is it called? Something to do with building a story brand or something. So I can't remember the name of it, but it's a great one. Anyway, about storytelling. But the second thing I thought of is that I used to work for Salesforce, and I know Salesforce recently have let a lot of people go, but they're a massive, massive company. And any time I was ever in those town hall meetings with the CEO, Mark Benioff is his name, he'd always talk about how sales is about storytelling, and being a CEO is about storytelling. It's about making sure that you are all the time telling the story of the company, and telling the story of how our product makes your life easier and better and less complicated and so on. You and I listen to podcasts for many reasons. And listening to a podcast like this probably means that you're looking to get insights about human psychology, motivation, persuasion, things like that. Well, if you're here to learn, listening is not enough. In fact, that'll get you one third of the way there. You will understand this topic. That's the first part. But secondly, you need to remember the most actionable content when you need it. It's what we call remembering it at the moment of truth. And thirdly, you'll need to find opportunities to deliberately practice this content. This episode has a suite of learning tools that you can use to help you do this. Just go to skillding.com and search for the title of this episode. Back to the show. So 100% agree with that. Master the art of storytelling. And it's... there's another guy actually called Neil Curran, who I did some work with previously, and he teaches corporate training, but he does it through improv comedy. So he teaches people improv comedy as a way of communicating, and it's the same thing. Like, someone just throws a topic at you, and you just have to make up a story about that. So it's
why do you think people love storytelling? Why do you think people, like, you know, when you're a child, you want parents to tell you a story? Why it's something from an early age that
creates an image. Our brains think in images, not in words, right? So when if you think about back in the day, before language was a thing for cavemen, they would have had to rely on images in their brain to go hunting, like, to know where they were and all that kind of thing. And so I think it's hardwired into us to, we prefer images and imagination rather than the written word. So when we read the written word, what it actually does is creates an image in your head. And that's why people say, I saw the film, but the book was better. Because when they read the book, the pictures they created in their head were perfect for them, whereas the film was just somebody else's version of it.
Yeah.
So that's why when you tell a good story, what you're doing as well is you're taking people on a journey, and you're making them you're spiking emotions in them as well. If you do it right, you're making them. What I always say at the end of any presentation, at the start of any presentation, you should think to yourself, what do I want the person to think, feel, or do by the end of this presentation? So I want them to feel like, oh, that was insightful, that was funny, that was interesting, that was scary. What was it? Like there's something you want them to feel or to think or to take action on at the end of your presentation. So stories help people to do that because they spike emotions, they create those images in people's heads, and it creates connection as well because it's a human connection. Like I said, like if you tell stories about your own personal life, or other customers who are just like you, who had the same problem that you did, it just creates that connection, you know? So yeah, that's a good one. Does he have any thoughts on how to master the art of storytelling, or does he just master the art of storytelling?
I don't think he goes into it too much. He gives kind of different examples of great TED Talks that had storytelling in them and how well they've done, and you know, just like the story I told you about the guys that sold on eBay for 2,700%, little stories like that that prove the benefits of storytelling. Do you have any suggestions on how to become a good storyteller?
I think structure is the first thing. It's like to me, a presentation done right is a story. And I always remember what my English teacher said in school many, many years ago. Tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them. And tell them what you just told them. So, like, there's no problem repeating stuff. And then you can build in surprise. You can build in humor. You can go off on tangents. As long as you have that, what you want them to think, feel, or do by the end of this story or the end of this presentation. And you can structure it out. Anytime I'm doing a presentation, I literally just have like as many slides as I think I'll need and put one sentence on each slide and then go, no, actually, no, I'll say this bit first. No, I'll put that bit second and then move things around. You work on the structure and then you just have to refine it by doing it. I think the more you tell the story, find an opportunity to tell the story in a setting where it's not going to, the result doesn't matter. You know, like whether it's, say for example, you're working in sales. And you think you have a story from your personal life that'll help move somebody along in the sales process. Well, try telling that story in the pub without telling anyone. Just go, oh, wait, I tell you what happened the other day. And just, it's almost like just saying the words out loud just helps you practice, you know. You can have the best presentation on paper, but until you actually say it out loud, you think, actually, that doesn't make sense what I'm saying there. So it's all so convoluted, like what I'm trying to... Makes sense to me, but when I say it out loud, it's all nonsense or it's jumbled, you know. So practice as well, I think. Get the structure down, have an idea what you want them to think, feel, or do by the end of it, and then just go and practice it. That's
what I would say. Completely agree, Kevin. And I suppose as this journey through life, I think mastering storytelling will definitely help me.
Yeah, definitely. Next one then.
Well, the next chapter is quite similar. And something that has definitely helped me because I've seen it in more than one book on public speaking, and it's have a conversation. Practice relentlessly and internalize your context so that you can deliver, so that you can deliver the presentation as comfortably as possible with a close friend or even a family member.
Yeah.
Have a conversation with the person you're giving the talk to.
Yeah.
So, when I was, I suppose, in college or my first job, I was quite nervous, you know, giving presentations and speaking in front of people. I think having a conversation kind of just humanizes what you're doing, especially when you have a lot of eyes on you. You can become very nervous.
Yeah.
And it's very natural as well. But having a conversation, almost trying to engage people in the audience, looking them in the eyes, I know it can be quite nerve-wracking, but it actually does help, and it's a great tip.
You know what I noticed when I first started? I started as a teacher years and years ago. When you're in the audience and you're looking at somebody talking, you're just looking at somebody talking. But when you're the other way around, when you're the teacher or the presenter looking down at the audience, you have many, many, many pairs of eyes staring up at you. And what's really interesting, this is a great tip for anyone who's nervous about presentations. when you go to do a presentation, like let's say me and you, right? So people are only listening to this, but Ben and I are looking at each other, right, while we're talking on screen here. And we're giving each other visual clues, right? So if you're talking, you just nodded there, right? So you're kind of to say that you heard me, right? But when you're a presenter talking to, say, 100 people, you don't get those visual clues back because the people sitting there are just listening. And they, in their heads, they think, you're not talking to me. You're talking to everyone, but you're not really talking to me. So I'm not obliged to give you the visual clues. So when you're standing in front of an audience and you say something you think is mildly humorous, right? And people may or may not laugh, right? Or you say something you think is kind of interesting. You don't get that nod at the head from most people. They just kind of sit there staring. Like, Jesus Christ, is my microphone not on? Can they not hear me? What's, because, and that, and the reason's because it's diffused. That responsibility of visual clues is diffused across the audience. Everyone thinks it's everyone else's responsibility to kind of nod along or to kind of give you the visual clues. So don't let that put you off when it comes to having that, like you said, that conversation with the audience. Assume that they're listening. If they're looking at you and they're not looking at their phones and they're not getting up and leaving, assume that they're interested. Assume that they're listening to you. That was a massive realization for me that, oh, they're listening, but they're not actually responding in the way they would if it was just a conversation. If it's a one-on-one conversation, people give each other those non-verbal cues, right? Those nodding at the heads and the ums and the ahs, like, and all that kind of stuff. But when it's one person talking to 100 people, the 100 people don't give you back those visual clues. So don't expect them. That was a massive thing for me. This idea of having a conversation, something I realized a long, long time ago with sales, is that you shouldn't call it a sales pitch. You should call it a sales conversation. And I'm guessing that's what you're figuring out as you're building your sales career, is that if you go in there just talking to people the whole time, they just switch off. You have to have a conversation. Ask them, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
What's your problem like? We may have the solution, we may not have the solution. Tell me all about your life. That's what I think.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that one, Kevin. And having a conversation as well, if you practice it like it's a conversation, actually makes you less nervous as well, because anyone can just talk. Well, most people can just have a normal chat. Mm. And if you just obviously don't think that you're talking to 100 people. I actually have a funny story. One of my first big presentations, it was up in Dublin, in one of the hotels next to Dublin Airport, and it was a pitch for the company I was working for at the time in front of about 250 C-level executives. And I was told I was doing this pitch about 2 or 3 weeks in advance. So I was like, I want to nail this every day, practice and video record myself, doing it in front of my football team, doing it in front of my team at work, doing it at my family, my girlfriend's family, everyone. I was just trying to practice. I even had a poke night with the lads one night. I was like, lads, can you listen to this? And I gave blah, blah. And I was acing it. Very nervous, drove up to Dublin. I stayed at my auntie's house, I'm actually allergic to dogs, and I stayed in her house, and I didn't bring any antihistamines with me or whatever, and I woke up the next morning. I got up very early. I got up about 6 o'clock, and my eyes, it was like I got two digs. My eyes were puffed out here, and I was like, oh no. And so I drove to the hotel, and I met the guy I was giving the presentation with, and he was like, you need to get an antihistamine ASAP. And I was like, oh my God, this is, one of the biggest moments of my life.
Yeah.
Well, it was at the time. You almost think, catastrophizing here. But went to the pharmacy, got the antihistamines. It didn't do anything, because at that time, damage was already done. And then I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, I just didn't want to do it at all. They called up our company to the stage, and I was the one giving the presentation. It was like a 2.5 minute pitch. But all that kind of nervous energy about me worrying about my eyes, it kind of distracted me from what I was actually going to do. And I personally thought I presented really well. Mm. So it was kind of like, I don't know, written in the stars that all this kind of mumble jumble stuff happened to me. Yeah. And then I you know, deliver the presentation because I was worried about something else. And then when the presentation came along, I was ready. But I will say as well, practice what you're speaking as well. I think he goes on about that as well.
I agree with that. Like that, if you practicing is very important, but there's no substitute for the real thing. And another thing, actually, what you reminded me of there is that if you're given a big presentation like that, try and get into the room beforehand and actually stand on the stage when the place is empty and just kind of get a feel for the place and where is the screen going to be and where is everyone going to be sitting. And it almost becomes like you want it to become familiar to you. So when you are up on the stage, it's not your first time there that you're actually, I've been here before, literally been here before. That was always a big thing for me, that I always wanted to see the room, even just for a split second. Let me see the room that I'm going to be standing in. And okay, that's grand. So I have an idea where everyone's going to be and stuff. So yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's a technique, all right. Get yourself puffed up eyes.
Something you're allergic to, yeah.
All right then, number four.
Yeah. So teach me something new. Reveal information that's completely packaged differently or often a fresh and novel way to solve an old problem. So I suppose when we're often doing a presentation or speaking in public, we try and share information that the audience does not know. But sometimes, even myself, when I'm sitting listening to someone and they're giving a boring old spiel, I tune off. So you have to kind of shock and awe the audience. And, you know, really a good way to do that is often figures and facts about the topic you're speaking on. And he says there, novel way to solve an old problem. So even if it is something that's been discussed 1,001 times, like smoking is the new, on smoking, cardiac arrest, you know, back pain is the new smoking or whatever, give a shocking stat about back pain there's thousands of ways you can deliver information. And I suppose try and integrate that into your presentation.
Yeah, do you know what that is? It's like having little sound bites, like having little like it's a little takeaway that people will remember. Go that, and it's, do you know what helps with that as well? If you pause before you say it and pause after you say it, it kind of sits in the air then, like, and that takes practice to get that pause correct as well. Teach me something new is that's what people are there for. Like they're there for the insights. They're there for,
yeah,
they don't want to just hear the same stuff they've heard 100 times. Like give them a new way of thinking about it, or a different angle on it, or that's any conferences I go to, you're there to hear the results of new research, like, or what do people in the industry think is happening, or who has their finger on the pulse kind of thing, you know. So
yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, a lot of the best presentations I've ever listened to had something that was kind of fresh or had a shocking stat or fact that I came away and she's doing something about that.
I guess that ties into the delivered jaw-dropping moments, which is kind of a similar thing. If you teach me something new while you're delivering a jaw-dropping moment, that's kind of the two things kind of overlap there, I would imagine, do they?
Yeah. Within that chapter 5, deliver jaw-dropping moments, he goes on about Bill Gates had one of the most viewed TED presentations, and when he was giving it, he was talking about malaria and the effects of malaria. So during his presentation, he had five,
locusts.
Locusts, yeah, pardon me. That deliver malaria, and he actually released them to the crowd, and the crowd went
mosquitoes
crazy.
It's mosquitoes that deliver malaria.
Mosquitoes,
not locusts.
Mosquitoes. thank you I know, yeah, I knew it was some flying beings,
some horrible thing.
But yeah, he released them to the crowd to kind of be like, okay, well, we're all first world, we don't have this problem. So he actually released them to a crowd. He later spoke about the fact that they didn't have any malaria in them, but that got shared around a million, 10 times. And he really got his point across that obviously we're not suffering from malaria in the first world country, but these people in third world countries can't escape it.
Yeah.
And I suppose he really delivered a jaw-dropping moment in that presentation.
Yeah, so release insects is the takeaway from that chapter. So regardless of your presentation, have some insects in a box in your pocket. Let them free.
Yeah. Well, I suppose what he was probably doing is, you know, obviously that's a huge issue in a certain part of the world, but he was trying to... What do you think he was trying to do in that presentation?
He's trying to hammer home his point. That's what he's doing. He's hammering home the point that he's delivering it to their doorstep. Like malaria is a terrible problem, and think, yeah, that's very sad, and, you know, we should do something about it. And then he's putting it into the room, going, well, what if there's malaria in the room right now? Like, what are you going to do about it? It is a great way. It's a great way to get your point across. It's a risk, though, because you could really have the audience turn on you. Like, but he is Bill Gates. And I assume that most people in the audience would assume that he isn't actually releasing malaria into the audience. Yeah. It's an interesting way to do it, because it's shocking. And like I said, that goes around the world, because people won't forget that in a hurry, you know?
No. And I think it's one of the most viewed TED Talks of all time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And as you said, word of mouth, you know, did you see blah, blah, blah. And then he gets his point across to more people when he delivers that jaw-dropping moment.
Yeah, exactly. It's like what you want people to think, feel, or do by the end of it. Like, what do you want people to feel? You want them to feel afraid of malaria. Like, oh, Jesus, he really spiked our emotions there by doing that. Like, that's... And what you want them to do, I want them to actually take action. I want them to hand over some money or do something, you know. So, next one then, lighten up. What's that about?
Yeah, it's probably a bit of a different point, but lighten up. I suppose add humor to your presentation as well. But remember, you're not Kevin Hart. I think he tells the story of a person that he mentored. And he was actually there when the person was giving their presentation, and he smashed his presentation, and then he made some sort of sexist joke at the end.
Yeah.
Absolutely, you know,
ruined
the whole thing. Exactly. So, you know, add humor and be yourself, but you're not a comedian.
Yeah.
And especially in a business setup, you're not. So don't try to be.
Yeah.
I've always found
that anytime I've given a presentation, that if I'm in the right mindset for it, if I'm looking forward to it and I feel like I'm well prepared and I know what I'm talking about, the humor generally comes. Like, you kind of find those beats of funny in the presentation. And I always think about presentations that you're almost like a goalkeeper facing a penalty. Because nobody expects the goalkeeper to do anything. The goalkeeper is a hero if he saves the penalty. And if the guy or the woman scores the penalty, then it's not the keeper's fault. It's because he wasn't supposed to save it. And in a presentation, if you're in any way good, people will love you for it. Because most presentations are rubbish. Most people go to presentations and they just read off the slides. Or they stand in the one spot and they don't change their tone of voice. They don't engage the audience. They don't do any of these things that we're talking about here. So if you can inject a little bit of humor, people will love you for it. Because the bar is so low for presentations. Because people hate doing them. They just try and get through them. It's the same with teaching, really. Is that I got through my slides, so, you know, that... It doesn't mean you learned them. It doesn't mean any there was any transfer of knowledge. Well, I got through my slides in the time I was given, so that's all I was supposed to do. But if you can inject humor, if you can be like, it's that lighten up actually ties in with the have a conversation one, because it's all about human connection. It's just a person standing on a stage chatting, right? And as long it's chatting, but you have a point that you're trying to make, and you're being structured in what you're saying. But I'm okay with people going off on a tangent, as long as they bring it back to the point they were trying to make. Some people, and you see it, is at weddings, where some, it's like somebody, obviously people like the best man can be nervous at a wedding, but it's so, I've seen it at weddings before where it's like the best man loses all sense of time. I've been at weddings where the best man spoke for 40 minutes about nothing. Yeah. Like he just was going, it's like he couldn't find a way out of the, he didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
He just couldn't stop talking. And eventually somebody had
to kind of tap him. Do you think that's nervousness?
Yeah, it's nerves. It was totally, it was nerves and like going into that fight or flight mode, like of just like, I don't know what to do here. And he just couldn't, he couldn't find a way to finish his talk, his speech. So like it's, but it's easier said than done. The only way to do these things is to practice. And especially if you're, if you get the opportunity to give the same presentation numerous times and you're deliberately practicing, making it better each time, you'll find those moments to lighten up. You'll find those moments to crack a little joke or to have a, to pause and let people think about what you're saying. So those things are this, these are all very, very good points that the author is making here.
I would also say expose yourself to them situations. If you are a best man at a wedding and you've to speak in front of a couple of hundred people, you know, if you have a year to prepare to that, you know, maybe go to a Toastmasters club, or if you're part of a team, see if you can, you know, speak in front of them for a bit and build your confidence that way. Don't just, you know, I haven't spoken in front of 50 people, 100 people for 10 years, so I'm just going to do it when the chance is given to me. Expose yourself to them situations. Yeah. And it's also an opportunity to say something great and powerful as well.
Yeah, that's what I mean about deliberate practice. It's so important to find those opportunities to, like you did, like just talk in front of your team, in front of your family, and for anyone who listened to you, basically just try and get it done. Like just keep saying it. There's a big difference between saying it in your head and saying it out loud. It's different. When you say it out loud, it just feels different, or there's something changes in it. So get opportunities to say it out loud as much as possible. The next one interests me. Stick to the 18-minute rule. So I know the TED Talks are all generally 18 minutes, but what is the idea behind this one?
Yeah, so I suppose they're not too short as well, because if you're on a stage for 5 minutes, some people would be like, what was he talking about again? It's hard to get your point across.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, if you're rambling on for 40 minutes, we have short attention spans as humans. So he says the Goldilocks zone is 18 minutes. Speak within 18 minutes.
And you know as well, with the presentations, nobody has ever complained about a presentation being too short. So if you can get your point across in 18 minutes or 16 minutes, whatever amount of time you have, if you have a minute or two left over at the end, people never complain, oh, that was too short. You know, if you've got your point across, then stop talking. It's like sales. Like, once the sale is done, stop talking. You don't need to keep pitching me like I'm buying it. Stop it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Articulate it well. All these presentations on TED, you know, there's true meaning behind it, and there's true value you can extract from it. I've listened to loads of TED Talks, and some are, they're all great, to be honest, because I suppose they stick to the 18-minute rule. They add some sort of humor, and all these kind of different techniques that Carmine goes through in his book, you know, TED presenters, do in their presentations. But I suppose in that one, you know, you don't want it to be too long, because you would bore your audience.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, it's a classic case of leave them wanting more like that. If they're looking at their watch, okay, when's it going to be done? Then you've gone on too long. Like, you always want to leave them wanting more. That's kind of a classic in presentations and a lot of things as well. The next one then, paint a mental picture of multisensory experiences. We've kind of talked about this a little bit, but tell us, what does the author say about this?
So I suppose the best way to present, the best presentations are visually appealing as well. Most people that are presenting have slides, you know. So add visual cues as well, because we're all different types of learners. Some people might be more visual. And as we kind of discussed with, you know, Master's Art of Storytelling, people like to, you know, not see the whole thing, but kind of paint a picture in their own head as well.
Yeah.
Adding a picture, or, you know, if you're for example, if Bill Gates was giving a talk about malaria, he might add a picture of a child or a mother suffering with malaria.
Yeah,
you know, to really hone in his point.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in the slides should really be they should serve two purposes. The slides, I think, should first and foremost be a cue for what the presenter wants to say next, and it should be something interesting for the audience to look at. But the slides shouldn't make sense without the presenter being there. Otherwise, just email it to me. You know when you go to a presentation and there's three bullet points and somebody just reads the three bullet points, what do I need the presenter for? I can read them myself. I can read them quicker than you can say it out loud. So I've read them. Now I'm just listening to you say it, which is torture. That's what makes presentations terrible. Change it into a picture and have that picture something and have a couple of words on the slide. And that will remind you as the presenter of what you want to say for this particular slide. And it's something interesting for the audience to look at. Like I said, it's, you know, somebody suffering from malaria or whatever the thing is that you're talking about, have something interesting for the audience to look at, but they shouldn't be able to make sense of what's on the slide without you explaining it. That's a huge thing that, you know, once my heart sinks when I see people standing up to do a presentation and there's a paragraph on the screen thinking, please don't just read that. Or another thing that people do is they have snippets from, you know, articles or books or whatever, and they talk about all whatever's on the screen. But do you want me to read this or do you want me to listen to you? Because I can't do both. So if you're putting all of this text on the screen, I'm naturally going to start reading that. So do you want me to read that or do you want me to listen to you? Because you've lost me then. Like, that's the engagement is gone then, because it's too much. So that's a huge thing, is allow people to paint the picture in their own head. And even the words you use, like look and listen and all the they kind of trigger all the different senses like that.
I also wouldn't be afraid to include a video into a slide. Yeah. If it really articulates your point as well, a short 50-second video that adds to the presentation.
One thing I would always say, though, check the technology. If that doesn't work, if you press play in that video and it freezes or there's no sound, it'll throw you off completely. Because that's happened to me. I've been in a room full of adults before at a time when I didn't feel like an adult and I wanted to play a video, and the video played and there was no sound and you're fiddling around with wires and you're just, the sweat is rolling down your back and it's horrible. So get into the room first, set it all up, get to that slide, put it into presenter mode. Make sure that when you click on your clicker that the video plays the way you want it to play. Check all of those things. But I definitely agree, if you can include a video or include music or whatever the thing is you want to include, check your technology. If your technology lets you down, it'll, no matter how much experience you have, it'll throw you, especially if your next three slides are referring to that video that they didn't see. Now you're trying to summarize the video and it's a mess. So show videos all you like, but check your technology first.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ninth and final point is what?
Stay in your lane. So I suppose a big thing, like, your audience isn't stupid. They can read you. They know if you're out of your comfort zone. I think try and be yourself as well when you're presenting. If you're shy, if you're a naturally shy person, that's okay. You know, be shy on stage.
Yeah.
And be transparent, be open with your audience. You know, people can spot a phony. And if you're trying to be someone or something you're not, you'll fail to gain the trust of your audience. So it comes back to the point number one, you know, unleash the master within. Really try and be honest with your audience as well. Like, if you're a confident person, be confident. Use hand signals.
Yeah.
Look into your audience's eyes, and then if you're shy and reserved, you know, that's okay as well. There has been great presentations done by people that are
introverts.
Introverted.
Yeah. What I would say is the way Now, I've given thousands of presentations over the years, and I've always tried to deliberately practice something. And what I found, when I look back on, you know, when I first started teaching, say, in secondary schools many years ago, and then moving into, like, professional, corporate, the corporate world and stuff, what I would notice about myself is that I know who I am. I know my personality. I know how relaxed I am around friends and family, the way we all are. And then what happens to people, and what used to happen to me, is when you stand onto a stage, it's almost like this straitjacket comes on you, or like you kind of like the shield comes down, and you find it impossible to be yourself. You find it impossible to be to use your natural hand gestures, because you're so overly aware of what you're doing with your hands, or you know, the way you're standing and stuff. Everything, you just become hyper aware of these things. So what I've noticed is that your deliberate practice should be one thing at a time. Your goal as a presenter is to take the person you are off stage and be that person on stage. But when you're that person on stage, it's almost like you want to turn up the volume a little bit. So on your hand gestures, on your tone of voice, the speed that you talk at, whether it's fast or slow, you want to do two things. You want to take who you are off stage, who you are with your friends and family, and put that person on stage. But then when you're on stage, the second thing is to turn up the volume, be yourself, but more. So it's very easy to say you should just be yourself, be calm, and the only way to do it is to do it again and again and again. But what you have to do is you have to deliberately practice particular things, whether it's, I'll give you an exact example of something that happened to me before. It was when I was doing the study skill stuff many years ago, and I knew the content backwards. I knew where all the jokes were, I knew how to engage the audience and all that. But one thing that kept happening to me, and it was just a bad habit I developed, is that I kept running out of breath. So I'd get to the end of a sentence and have to take this huge deep breath. What was happening, it was making me sweat, because I was like, it was like I was panting. Like I just couldn't. I remember thinking, I know this content so well that the next time I do this, all I'm going to do is practice breathing, making sure I'm taking a deep enough breath at the start of whatever section I was on. And I remember thinking, that's how you become a good presenter. You have to reflect on what you did. You have to do the thing, right? Do the presentation, whatever the thing is. Go and do it. Try and deliberately practice something in the moment. But then afterwards think, well, what went right? What went wrong? What could I do better? And then almost remove emotion. Don't beat yourself up about it. Go, well, you know, even if it went terribly, you have to say to yourself, well, it can't get any worse. I can definitely get better. I can move around the stage more. I can take longer pauses. I can talk quieter. I can talk louder. I can point to the screen when something interesting is on the screen that I want them to look at. And slowly but surely, what will happen is you will be able to take the person you are off stage and put that person on stage. But the only way you'll do it, the only way you'll become calm and become naturally yourself, is to do it again and again while deliberately practicing elements of what you think you can fix.
Can I hit you with a bit of a curveball?
Sure.
I practice presentations so much, and there was one particular presentation I practiced religiously, but I learned the line and that hindered me so much because throughout the presentation, if I forgot a line, I was like, you know,
you didn't know what the next bit was then,
Yeah, and it took me into place where I didn't want to be. So when you say practice your presentation, you mean obviously not word for word, but just the whole flow of it, what you want to get across in the middle of your presentation, at the end.
What I would do is I remember in my head, I used to have I seem to think a lot in visual analogies. And I remember giving presentations where I had six dots out in front of me, right? So like literally coming out from me. And I would think, well, I'm going to have to get to that first dot. And the point is whatever it is, right? This is, say it was a study skill stuff. This is how this is how your memory works, right? So I'd have certain stories and analogies and ways to get to that point, but I had to hit that point at, say, 6 minutes into the presentation. And then, so I'd be watching the clock and I'd say, my next point is this, and I have to get to that point at 15 minutes into the presentation. And then, so you're yeah. all that. So that's what I mean about, like, if you try and memorize something word for word, it won't be natural. And if you miss a word, or like I said, you forget a sentence, you think, oh shit, it just throws you off completely. So you have to, what are the points I need to make? And at what stage of my presentation do I need to be at that point? When I was given those study skills, I'm just thinking of it here now. There was a story we used to have about Henry Ford and how he lost everything and built himself back up and whatever. I had to be starting that story with 40 minutes left in the presentation. And I knew if I was at the Henry Ford story with 40 minutes left, plain sailing, and if I was behind or too far ahead, I'd miss something or something had gone wrong. So I would have these points along the way that I have to get to this slide or I have to get to this particular point by this particular mark, and then I knew if I was on target or not. So like I would have those 6 points laid out in front of me, and I might go off on all sorts of tangents, but I have to arrive at this third point at minute 18. Whatever the thing is, and the only way you figure that out is by practice, is by actually doing it. So if you try and memorize word for word, it'll absolutely mess you up, because you will forget a sentence, or you'll start late, or somebody say, oh, you don't have 15 minutes, you've only got 12 minutes. And you go, what do I do now? Okay. So like this, things go wrong in presentations all the time, and you have to be flowy enough that you can roll with the punches, basically, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that point. Yeah. Public speaking is hard, but the only way to get better is expose yourself to situations, practice. And I suppose there's a few more points we touched on to make a great presentation.
Yeah. All right, Ben, give us the name of the book and the author one more time.
So Talk Like Ted, I suppose you can get on Amazon or, wherever these days, by Carmine Gallo. He's very good himself.
Yeah.
And I suppose TED in general, I love listening to TED presentations.
TED Talks are great.
Yeah.
All right, and Ben, thanks very much. We will see you again, I'm sure, for another episode.
Thanks, Kevin. All right. Much appreciated.
Always. Hey, before you go, just a quick message about Skilding and what we're all about. We believe that true learning happens when you understand, remember, and deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast just covered the first part. You now understand the key takeaways from this book. To help you remember them, we will send you 3 interactive summaries that accompany this episode to empower you to remember the key takeaways at that moment of truth. To really embed the knowledge from this episode, you can use the dedicated and completely private digital portfolio to set a time and a date to go out into the big bad world and deliberately practice the key takeaways covered in this episode. For all this and for all of our podcast episodes, head over to skilding.com, that's skillding.com, and search for the title of this episode. Until next time.